I am probably the most boring person you can imagine. I work in an unnecessary office, doing unnecessary things. My cubicle, plain as white bread, is uncontaminated by any personal belongings, and my desk is always tidy. I have no friends, no family, and when I go home, I watch the news, eat something, and then I go to bed. On the weekends, I take walks outside in order to absorb enough vitamin D to function properly. I have no preference in movies, music, food, people, or sexuality. All is fine with me, and I don't care for money, recognition, or love. I have heard my colleagues talking about me, how weird it is that I seem to have no interests at all, and how rarely I show emotions, exaggerating theories about how I might suffer from depression, autism, psychopathy, or PTSD. Now, I tell you, none of that is true. For what they don't know is what I do when the day is over. You see, when I turn off the lights, lie in my bed, and close my eyes, I leave my body and start traveling. It's called astral projection. I've done some research, but I've soon lost interest, for what I've read on the internet is but the tip of the iceberg for me. Each night, I, or my astral body, rises. I watch myself sleep. I walk or glide or float out of my tiny one-room apartment and go anywhere I want. I don't have to concentrate, meditate, or anything. From when I was a child, I was able to do this without any effort. I flew through the clouds. I dove to the bottom of the ocean. I traveled the world, watching the northern lights, visiting the old cities of Europe, roaming the coasts of Japan, observing the animals in the jungle. I once tried to reach the moon, but it took too long and I had to get up for work. The thing I enjoy most, however, is people watching. Since walls pose no obstacle for me, and nobody can see or hear me, I am able to watch whomever, wherever, and whenever I want. I am aware that my little hobby raises some substantial moral questions, so I made a rule. When I'm in my physical body, I am not to act upon any information that I've learned while I was traveling. I have to act as though I only know what I am able to know from my waking life. I am a quiet, neutral observer. Now, this is easier said than done. I've seen my share of criminal activity, theft, rape, murder, and so on. In some cases, I broke my rule and anonymously reported it. In some, I didn't. In order not to have to face these moral dilemmas, and since I don't see myself as a superhero, I try to avoid areas where things like these happen more often. Also, I don't go to active war zones. I know that there is not much I can do about wars in different parts of the world. So, in this case, it's easier to uphold my non-engagement rule. But some things I've seen there, I'd rather unsee. In addition, I try not to observe people I know closely. It can get really hard not to act upon private information about your work colleagues and use them for your advantage somehow, even unconsciously. I do have my favorite people to watch, though. Some of them I watch for a few weeks, some longer. Lately, I've been visiting a young woman, living alone. From what I've gathered, her husband had recently died. How, I couldn't say. However, it was clear that she was in mourning. She wore black every day, spent a lot of time in her bed, looking at his picture and crying. Her apartment was a mess, but she did the best she could to keep it together, removing everything that rots, but unable to do more. There were no new messages on her phone when she got home. Nobody visited her, and she never went out. Something about her touched me. That grief, that unthinkable reality of having lost a loved one. She must have imagined herself with him for the rest of their lives. Now, her life was empty, and her world seemed utterly devoid of any meaning. I don't know why, but sometimes I tried to imagine comforting her. When she sat at the table, eating her pre-prepared dinner, I sat across from her, keeping her company. When she cried, I spoke kind words to her, and sometimes when she laid in bed, crying, I laid next to her, stroking her hair, holding her until she drifted off to sleep. Slowly but surely, I realized that what I was doing was weird. Not in the voyeuristic sense. I've made peace with that a long time ago. Since my presence, my gestures and words of comfort couldn't reach her, who was I doing this for? Was I just soothing my bad conscience for watching her? Taking part in her life without being invited? Or was there more? Why was I watching her in the first place? What was it about this lonely person that fascinated me? About this young woman, disconnected from the world, living more like a ghost than a human being? I had to find out. Over time, I spent less and less time watching other people until I visited only her, every night. As my obsession grew, I started to notice small things. One time, while I was laying next to her in bed and put my arm around her waist, it seemed like she, in her sleep, tried to hold my hand. Sometimes, when she was sitting alone in her room, she suddenly turned her head in my direction. She was looking right through me, but on her face there was an expression of bewilderment. It looked like she felt like there was somebody watching her. I was unsure if I was just imagining it, but my feeling of being uninvolved slowly faded, and I became a little nervous. Then, one evening, she came out of the shower, wiped the steam off her mirror, and looked at herself. And all of a sudden, her eyes met mine. Visibly agitated, she called out her dead husband's name, before turning her head and seeing nothing but a blank wall. Did she somehow feel my presence? My heart sank. Maybe I should have read more about what I'm doing. As my uneasiness grew, things started to change. She spent less time in grieving apathy. She tidied up her apartment, opened the blinds, went out more, read more, especially about occult and supernatural stuff. And most unsettling, she started talking to her dead husband on a regular basis, telling him about her day, how she missed him, what she was thinking about, etc. Maybe I should stop, I thought. This thing was messing me up. I couldn't concentrate anymore. I got distraught from work. I neglected my daily duties, and my once tidy life became a mess. Before long, I made a decision. I had to stop visiting her. No good could come from it. The night came where I would last visit her and say goodbye. As I entered her apartment, there she was, sitting at the table, smiling, as if she was waiting for me. Even though I knew, or hoped, she couldn't see me. I sat down at the table, facing her. I took a deep breath, looking for the right words to tell her that I wouldn't be coming back. Hoping that even though she couldn't hear me, the fact that I told her would give me some peace of mind. Before I could utter a single word, she spoke.
"Before you say anything, Richard, let me set the mood."
With that, she lit some candles on the table, then she stood up and turned off the light.
"I've been missing you so much, Richard. You cannot imagine. I cried and cried, feeling so utterly lonely. My life became so empty when you left. It felt like a big black hole. Honestly, I've been thinking about how I could end it all, just to be together with you again. Then I realized that you're not actually gone. You're right here with me. I can feel your presence. Sometimes I can see you out of the corner of my eyes, and when I lie in bed, I can feel your warmth beside me."
She continued talking while she grabbed a handful of salt in the kitchen and made a line on the floor in front of the door connecting her apartment to the hallway. What the hell?
"First, I felt so happy that you were here with me. But over time, I started asking myself, why? Why would you leave me? Just to haunt me now? How could you do this to me?"
Her voice started trembling.
"You said that you loved me, that you'd stay by my side. How could you just leave me like this? Lost and alone with no one to talk to, no one to love. How could you just leave without saying a word?"
She was crying now.
"You could have talked to me. I had no idea how you felt, how depressed you were. Don't you trust me? We could have worked something out. I would have found somebody to help you. We could have overcome it together. How could you just kill yourself?
Then she took some deep breaths and calmed herself.
It doesn't matter now. I thought I knew you, but apparently I don't. I don't know anything anymore. But I want to show you something. You might have noticed that you can't leave this apartment. The salt acts as a barrier, so you will have to listen.
Her words sent shivers through my spine. I got up at once and tried to pass through the doors, but I couldn't step over the salt. I was also unable to pass through the ceiling or the walls. Apparently the salt had some symbolic power sealing the room. Damn, I should have read more. The sudden realization came over me like a shock. I was trapped in here. Imagine being used to absolute freedom and then suddenly realizing you're in a cage. This got much too real.
Do you even realize what you did to me? Did you even think about me before you slit your wrists? Do you know what it feels like to find the dead body of your loved one? To see it bloated, bloody, and lifeless? Can you imagine what that does to you? I can't get the image out of my head. I see it every time I close my eyes. I dream of it every night. Do you know how that is? No, of course you don't. You don't give a fuck. Well, I'll show you.
With that, she got up on the table and grabbed the noose that was hanging from her ceiling and put it around her neck.
Wait!
I yelled.
You left me. Without even saying goodbye, you left me. But you can't leave now. You will have to watch. You will have to watch me die and rot. You will learn what it feels like. And then, we can be together again.
No, wait, I'm not.
I love you, Richard. See you on the other side.
With that, she kicked over the table she was standing on. The rope tightened around her neck, her feet dangling in the air. I screamed for help. I tried to leave and go back to my body so I could call an ambulance, but it was to no avail. All I could do is sit there and watch her struggle. Her face became dark red. Her eyes rolled into the back of her head, and saliva was dripping from her mouth as she slowly suffocated. After about 5 minutes, she finally stopped twitching. Now she was just hanging there. Morning came. The birds were chirping, and she was still just hanging there. I guess I was in shock. It took me a whole while until I was able to formulate a thought. How long would it take for somebody to find her? Days passed, and I was still trapped in this small apartment, with only her body hanging from the ceiling that kept me company. She started to turn gray. Her lifeless eyes became milky white. Dark purple veins and arteries became visible through her skin, and flies started to gather around her, and all I could do was watch her rot. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't leave. And I knew that this was all my fault. Most of the time, I sat huddled together in a dark corner, where I didn't have to look at her. And yes, I was crying, silently begging for somebody to come and get me out of there. Imagine being trapped like this, with your sin hanging, rotting, looking at you with its dead, unforgiving eyes. I can't take it. Please, somebody help me. For the love of God. After 12 days, finally, I heard a knock at the door.
Miss, please open up. Please.
I heard the lock turning. In stepped a policeman holding a handkerchief over his nose and mouth, followed by paramedics.
Jesus Christ, one of them said.
Their steps blurred the line of salt on the floor. Now was my chance. I passed through the door and let my feeling guide me to my physical body as fast as possible. Buildings, streets, and people passed me by at an unbelievable speed until I finally found myself and merged into my flesh. I awoke in a hospital bed. Apparently, my obsessive punctuality led my superiors to become suspicious pretty quickly when I didn't show up for work without calling in sick. Authorities found me at home, lying in bed.
I was brought to a hospital, and they thought I was comatose. Little did they know that I was actually wide awake the whole time, trapped in hell. Now I'm laying here, traumatized, afraid to fall asleep, with images of her rotting corpse flashing through my head, feeling like shit. But I am alive and back in my body. The beeping sounds the machines made prove it. But what is this odd feeling? Ever since I awoke, I feel like I'm being watched. I think I see somebody out of the corner of my eye, but when I turn my head, they're gone. Who is this? The call came in the late evening. The orange in the sky had left, and all the animals had burrowed away, anticipating the storm heading north. I was on the outskirts of Cadence, eating a Milky Way and watching the stars disappear behind the clouds. The cruiser's phone rang, and dispatch notified me a man had wrecked on Route 16, heading south to Lilac. What happened was that the storm had covered the road, which is normally empty at night. Cadence is a small town, and Lilac is even smaller. The only people that drive down Route 16 are the farmers needing groceries, and they're never out that late. I figured the wreck was an outsider, somebody who didn't know the roads tend to be unsalted, since the town saves money by giving that job to the sun. Dispatch told me a tow was on the way, but it would be at least an hour. The guy would feel safer with the cops there, but small towns have small forces, and it was my night of patrol. I'd have to do. I finished my Milky Way and drove off. Minutes on the road, and the white winds already rushed past the car. The dashboard said 45, but the winds made me feel like I pushed 70. I worried I would miss the wreck, that the winds might actually make me a new victim. But in the distance, I saw the red brakes, and the black of a sedan. I flipped my lights, parked 10 feet away, wishing I had remembered my snow hat. I didn't bother getting my clipboard, just my flashlight, though even that felt useless against the constant white. The wreck was as I suspected, slid off the road into a nearby ditch, one lower than your average curb. Even without the ice, backing up would have been an act of God. As I approached, I nearly slipped myself, had to catch myself on nothing. The front of the sedan was caked in snow deep in the ditch, but the driver's side door was ajar. I stepped down into the ditch, pulling the door open more. The car was running, but not the heat. My flashlight revealed an empty car. I turned, looked around the streets and nearby cornfields painted red and blue by the cruiser lights. Where was the man? I walked around the car, inspecting the underside. Nothing. I popped the trunk. Empty. Back on the street, I looked over the car again. Something about it was off, beyond the mystery of the missing man. What it was, I couldn't put my finger on it. But despite the clear nosedive into snow, the sedan was clean, almost immaculate. I took another look and realized there was no license plate, not even a temporary one. Hello? I asked the cold world. Only the wind replied. Back in the cruiser, I was thinking of where the man went, letting the heat blast against my face. He could have gone south, taken his chance with the storm towards Lilac. Anybody, outsider or not, would have known that was suicide, though. And the cornfields nearby, maybe he ran into those, hoped he'd find a warm farmhouse. I was about to call it in, put a lookout for a guy trying to survive the snowstorm on foot, when I heard it. Dog barking. It was by the wreck. And then came another sound, though I couldn't make it out inside the cruiser. Outside, the wind bared its teeth on me, howled its demand to go away. But underneath was the dogs barking. Barking, then gone. A man's voice asked, "Everything all right?" The dog started barking again. One of the farmers must have heard the wreck, had come to investigate. I started towards the wreck, telling the farmer that it was under control. Except, what was a farmer doing out in the storm? Halfway there, I stopped, realizing that no, nothing was making sense. The missing guy, an unknown car, and now this. I saw a canine shape move into view from behind the car. The dog. It hadn't stopped barking, and I worried it would come at me, that things might get dicey out here. The other officers had a running gag that out here that the local dogs never liked pigs. But this one stayed put, barking, barking until it wasn't, and the man was asking me if everything was okay again. The question hung in the air. Something churned my stomach. The dog resumed its barking for a few seconds, stopped, and the man asked the same question for the third time. And it hit me. The barking. The man's voice. It came from the same place. I shone my flashlight at the dog and felt the blood grip my face. It was no dog. A humanoid shape, blasted into obscurity by the winter veil, looked up at me. Is everything all right? It started running, crawling towards me. Before I realized what was happening, there was a gunshot, and I was standing in the snowstorm, looking down at the body of a man. I held my breath as I waited for the snow to turn red. I let the wind bite my nose, frost my unblinking eyes. But the blood never ran, and what happened instead was the thing shuddered, and he started gagging. The bullet was spit out. I ran to the cruiser to drive away. There was no other option. I slammed the car door, cranked the key. The car rumbled in disagreement and wouldn't start. In my head, I was screaming with the wind, wondering how hard you need to palm slam a wheel to fuel a car with desperation. Barking interrupted my thoughts. I started to blubber to myself. All those years wanting to be a cop suddenly going out my ears, melting to the floor. A hand smacked on the window and I screamed. I slammed the car wheel harder, turned the key enough to snap it. From the outside, the thing asked me if everything was okay. I just kept screaming. The car suddenly started, foot down, put in reverse, and brake, foot forward, and gunned it, leaving whatever the hell that was behind. And while the snow blew past, while I tried to stop myself from blubber breathing, I wondered what all had just happened, what I had wandered into. Things like that don't ever have an answer. Just more questions. I just started asking, why? That word was on my lips when the car started to swerve. And in that moment, I did everything wrong. I forgot all my training in the frenzy. The cruiser flipped on its side, and I was lucky to not be crushed. I was crawling out of the window when two headlights cut through the snow right at me. The next thing I saw was a large man getting out of a truck. It was the tow. He was rushing over to me, asking me if I was okay. All I could do was mumble. He helped me to my feet, walked me over to the truck. My head was turned behind us the entire time, waiting to see that naked figure walking down the road. The inside of the truck smelled like sweat, and to this day I remember it. He was on the street, me in the truck, and he was asking me details, where I had to be, and that he was sent out for another, and had I been the officer they sent out. I couldn't answer. It felt unreal. And when I looked up, looked out the windshield to the cold forever, I saw an outline and began to cough, to gag. I heard the trucker ask what the hell was going on, and then he was walking towards it. I got out, told him to stay away, ran to him to shake his shoulders. Except, I didn't. That wreck I had, it numbed me. So I just stood there, mouthing words and shaking my head no to the trucker's back. And then it happened. The thing was in the air, and then on the trucker. And that blood that was supposed to come earlier at the gunshot, it must have just jumped through time, because a shower burst from the trucker. There was a scream, and all I saw was a cloud of red. I opened my mouth to scream, but kept coughing. In the movies, the monster realizes it's been seen, looks up from the fresh kill, and starts walking toward the new meat. But the thing never moved from that trucker's body, and I knew he was just going to finish eating him or God knows what else. So, like a coward, I got into the truck. I got out my shaking hands onto the wheel and hit the gas. I didn't even run over the thing, just rushed past it, not letting myself look over. For fear the thing would be looking at me. For fear the trucker would be. I drove all the way to Lilac. I fell out of the truck into the snow-covered parking lot of a Dollar General. In dreams, I still see that store. And at the counter is the trucker, his blood coursing down onto the conveyor belt. He's mouthing something I can't hear. Sometimes he's barking instead. I never did look outside the parking lot to see if the thing was still out there. The next morning, I called in my resignation. When they asked why, I just hung up. A friend in the force told me that they eventually went out to search for the trucker, since his wife called terrified he met an unseen fate in the storm. They never found him. I remember laughing at that news, though I couldn't tell you why. In the coming days, they tried pulling me in for a statement. An answer of why the guy's truck sat battery dead at a Dollar General. But I was heading south to somewhere, anywhere the snow avoided. I expected to be chased, either by my own colleagues or that thing. But it never happened. Since then, I've read up on what it could be. Dug up the past to figure out my present. If you ask me, I still couldn't tell you what I saw, but I remember the old stories my father used to talk about, of bandits on the road, how these bandits would stage fake accidents, take advantage of the kindness of others, how that still happens to this very day, except instead of men in cowboy hats, they're entire groups. A strength in numbers thing. I guess so, but I'm told it's rare, and at first that explanation didn't quite fit. But the world's a strange place, and if caterpillars can look like snakes, well, maybe something watched from the shadows when people use those fake accidents, watched people get killed for being too trusting, scrounged up the looted bodies left behind. And when those old-time highwaymen stopped their trade, there was a dwindling of fresh prey. Evolution. Does it explain it? I don't know. But it's the best I've got when I look up at the night sky. I haven't had a Milky Way in years, but that doesn't make up for what I did. Maybe one day I'll go back, stand in the snowstorm by a mysterious car, do what I should have done back then. Maybe the storm will die down, and the thing's face will be revealed. And maybe I'll look into the stolen eyes of the trucker, and whisper, "I'm sorry."